Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit in creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest. Her name is Bev Berry, and she has a book that's coming out very soon. So she's an author, a life coach, a retreat leader, and a seminar leader. And boy, does she have a story for you. So welcome to the studio, Bev Berry.
Thank you, Hillary. I'm excited to do this with you.
Yeah, so we had some technical glitches, but when we needed it, it worked. It's unbelievable, right?
I'm on a huge technical learning curve in every area I try to do. So
yeah, but we made it. So, yeah. Yay! Yay! Right. So I know you have a story. Well, her book is called "Angel Babies Forever." Do you want to start with that, or do you want to start before that? You can.
We can start with that.
Okay. Okay.
So you just want me to tell a little bit about the book?
Well, tell more about your life. You could talk about the thing with a book is you want to give enough away, but you want people to still read it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'll let you, I don't want to say it. You say what the book's about.
Okay. Well, just to say a little bit before, up until the time the book starts, it's a memoir that's just for a portion of my life. But up until that time, I had had three children. I was a childbirth educator, and all three of my births had been really simple and easy. Well, not simple, but fairly straightforward. And my three boys that were born were healthy. And the book's about my next two boys died. So one of them died 20 minutes after he was born, and the other one was delivered 2 months early, lived in the hospital for about 2 months, and then died. And so the story's about what that was like to go through that, how I made it through it, what it was like, what our life was like during that time. And I'm pretty open about everything. And so it's pretty straightforward. I don't try to soft code it or anything. It's the truth about what it felt like and how that was to go through. And then after they died, I go through this process of, well, after the first one died, I go to try to adopt. They won't let me. After the second one dies, I go back. They finally let us adopt. And we end up adopting two girls 6 months apart because of the issues that happened in the adoptions. And one is African-American and the other one's Asian-American. And so then adopt the two girls. And then going through that process, I went, okay, this could be done better because we went through some stuff. The birth mothers went through some stuff. And so I decided to start an adoption center. And so I started an adoption center in Santa Barbara, California, ran that for 7 years, and then ended up moving on to becoming a corporate trainer.
Wow. All right. So let's go back. Can we go back now?
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. Where were you born and where were you raised? Where did you grow up?
I was born in Long Beach, California. Okay. But I was mostly raised up above in the mountains above Santa Barbara, California.
Okay. Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had two sisters and one brother.
Okay. What number kid are you?
I'm the baby.
Oh, you're a baby. Okay.
All right. So you grew up. Did you go off to college or?
I did. It was interesting. I got pregnant with my first child just before I graduated from high school. And okay. So I had not planned on going to college. But once I had a child and I was a single mom at 18, I said, ooh, I better figure out how to take care of this baby. And so I decided to go to college.
Wow. So how'd you do that with a baby?
Well, public assistance.
Okay.
You know.
And were your, did you stay in touch with the guy, the father of the child?
Yes. We actually ended up getting married when our son was a year old.
Okay.
And then when we had our second son, 3 years later, we got divorced. So then I was a single mom at 21 with two kids.
Wow. So. And then when was your third son? Was that a lot later?
He's only 4 years younger than my second son, but I got married again. Okay. And
different guy though. Different guy?
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
So, got married again and we had our first son 9 months after we got married.
Okay.
And no problem getting pregnant here. And then he was also the father of the two babies that died.
Okay.
And I adopted the two girls with him.
Okay. So how long were you married to him?
We were married about 9-10 years around there.
9-10 years. Okay.
I had another husband after that. But
you did?
Yes. But no children with him. But yeah, he's still around. He lives in Oregon and is married for his fourth time.
So I guess you're not married to him anymore.
No.
Wow. All right. So good. So
I'm not married to the third one either.
Right.
At least anybody's looking. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, wait. So, okay. There was the one where you had the two kids.
Uh-huh.
You got married again. That's number two. And had another son.
Same father. The first two are with the same father.
Oh, okay. But you only married him once.
Yes.
Okay. And then
our oldest son was a year old when we got married.
Right.
And then we had another one and then we got divorced. I know. It's a very complicated life.
I don't know why I'm trying to figure this out. Okay. So that was the first husband. Then the second husband, you had the third son and you lost two and adopted the two girls.
Yes. All of that with him.
Right. Okay. And two girls. Okay. And
that's
then who?
All in the book.
And then the third was this last guy, the Oregon man? Or was there?
No, that's the second one. The third one, I hate to say it, doesn't really count.
Okay.
All right. Very short and, you know, thought it was the one and it didn't work out either. So.
Okay. And that was.
I always said, I'm a communication trainer. I'm a fairly nice person. I think I'm nice. And I don't know why I can't stay married. And a friend of mine said, there's only one thing wrong with you. And I said, what's that? You know? And she said, your picker's broken.
Oh, see, I was going to say, you're really good at getting married. Like some people are really. Yeah, you're really good at getting married and getting pregnant. I mean, not everybody's good at that. So, you know. Some people are good at staying. Some people are, right? Obviously.
Staying married part that I still have to work out.
Yeah. Right. Okay. All right. So there's a lot to unpack, as they say. Did you ever find out? So wait. I'm trying to get the husband. So the first husband was the one with the first two sons, right?
Oh. First, high school boyfriend.
Right. High school. Okay. Two sons, right? With him. And then the second one was the third son. Okay. Okay.
Yes.
So did you ever find out why those two boys didn't make it? Like, was that you did?
We eventually did. When the first one died, they had no idea what happened. I mean, all through the pregnancy, his heart rate was great, you know, and then when he was born, he just 20 minutes later, he died. He, do you know what an Apgar score is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, it's 1 to 10. No baby is really ever born at a 10, but at least an 8 or a 9. My other ones were pretty high. When he was born, I kept saying, is he okay? Is he okay? Is he okay? And nobody would answer me. And so I thought, well, I'll ask, what's his Apgar? Because they won't know it's me. They'll think it's somebody else in the room.
Oh.
And his Apgar was 1. And I was like, well, what the heck is working? You know, what's happening? So I had been, his heart was working fine until he was born. And he couldn't move and that sort of thing. But they did an autopsy. They could not figure out what was wrong. And my doctor just said, you know, it was probably just a freak accident. He looks fine other than that he didn't breathe. So we thought, well, that's when I went to the first adoption agency to find out if we could adopt.
Yeah.
And they told us, no, you can't because you have 3 biological children. So you can't adopt. I'm like, said, okay, well, we'll try again. And all these
doctors, you only have, oh no, you had the 3 boys already. Okay.
Right. 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 Yeah. Okay. And so, and all this time, all I wanted was a girl.
No.
I joke with my oldest son and said, if you were a girl, I'd have 1 kid. So, but, and that's a whole other interesting story because his first child was triplets. So, yeah.
Wow.
So he made up for it.
And they were girls?
No, 2 boys and a girl.
Oh, gosh. All right. So did they ever figure out with the second one?
Yeah. So with the second one, they delivered him 2 months early because they said, obviously, carrying him to term doesn't work. You know, yeah. So let's get him out, see if we can say figure out what's wrong and fix it. So they delivered him. And because neither one of them was moving very much during the pregnancy after a while, they did a muscle biopsy to figure out, and sent it all over the country to see if anybody could figure out what was going on. So it finally came back and they called us in and they said that they both had the same thing, obviously, and it was something called myotonic dystrophy. And it was on the enzymes on the chromosomes, on one of the chromosomes, and their bodies couldn't metabolize fat because of this disorder. And so the fat deposited into their muscles, and that's why they quit moving, and eventually their hearts and lungs. And so that was like 2 weeks before he died, we found that out. And then we had to...
How did they even keep him alive for that long?
Respirator. Mm. You know, because I had been pumping the heart, so then they started doing the heart and release for him. But then we had to decide whether to take him off the ventilators and, you know, take his life support off. So that was an interesting decision to have to do. And we decided that we wanted to take him off, but my son wanted to be there when they took him off and hold him. And the doctors didn't seem to like that idea very much. You know, they kind of gave us looks and stuff. And they said, well, let's give him 1 more week. We think he's going to go on his own. And so they sent us home. And about 3 days later, we got a call. And we had already signed papers saying that to take him off, that they could take him off. And 3 days later, we got the call that he had died. And so my husband thought that they just took him off because we had signed the papers because they didn't want him there. So we didn't get to be with them when he passed. But that's changed a lot now. The hospitals are much more open about things like that. They're more educated.
Yeah. I know someone, trying to think what her name is, who works with families who have babies that aren't going to make it. And she has those hard conversations with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really a gift to be able to do that, you know, and to provide that. But yeah, so that was, wow. So your other boys, how old are they now? The first 3.
My oldest one is, I think 53.
Wow.
In February, he'll be 54. And then the next one will be 51 in May. And then the one after that will be 47 Yes, 46.
Wow. 46. So how many grandkids do you have?
I have nine.
Nine.
Some of them are by marriage, but yeah, I thought I was going to have 100 because the first one was triplets, you know? So.
Yeah. Wow. So do you ever get to see them? So I know, in case you don't know, Bev now lives in Costa Rica, which we'll get there, but do you ever get to see the grandchildren? Do they come?
Yes. And actually, when they were born, I moved in. They were born in Santa Barbara, and my son and his wife were still living there, and I was there. And so I moved in, and my daughter-in-law's mother moved in, and we lived with them for the first 2 years.
With the triplets, you mean?
Yeah, to help the triplets, yeah. So they're very special to me. Oh, my grandchildren are special, but, you know, and they're going to be 21 in March.
I keep picturing little babies, you know.
I know. Oh, they were so tiny too. One of them does have cerebral palsy. They weighed 2 pounds 4 ounces, 2 pounds 1 ounce, and 1 pound 5 ounces when they were born. So they were barely the size of one regular newborn. Yeah.
Oh my god.
So they were in the hospital for a while. One for a month, one for 6 weeks, and one for 3 months.
And was the littlest one the one that was cerebral palsy or no?
Yeah. Because when they stay in the hospital, when they're in the neonatal intensive care unit, there's a lot of, they pump them with a lot of oxygen to keep them going. And that causes eyesight problems and often brain damage. But if they don't give them the oxygen, it still causes brain damage, you know? So.
Oh my God.
It's a real fine balance that they haven't perfected. At least they hadn't 20 years ago or 21 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, but he's an amazing, amazing kid. They all three are. They all three have done theater. And even the one with cerebral palsy, he's done theater. And because the other two would do theater and I'd be sitting next to him watching it and stuff. And he would know all their songs and all their lines before they would. And so I said, Logan, don't you want to be up there and do that with them? And he said, I don't know. And then finally, one year he tried out and he, you know, went in. And so he did. They gave him parts that were really cool. Like they did the what do you call that one? Lion King. Mm-hmm. And they made him a giraffe because he has a little trouble walking. So he had stilts, you know, to hold so he could walk. Then the second one was Mary Poppins, and he had a line. They made him the old bank president, and so he had a cane to use and stuff. It really worked with his disability and stuff. So
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So did you ever? I'm looking at my notes here. Did you ever finish your college, or were you busy? You did.
No.
What did you major in?
I got a bachelor's degree in sociology. I started out at Sonoma State in humanistic psychology, and then my husband wanted to go back to Santa Barbara, and so I went, well, what can I do? And they didn't the psychology at UCSB was all clinical, and I didn't like it, so I did sociology, and then I went out and got my teaching credential. Hmm. And then after that, I worked with pregnant teens and teen parents. Has been there, done that, you know.
Now, was that part of the school system?
Yeah. Yeah. They had a special program at the high school for pregnant teens and teen parents. And I had become, in the meantime, a childbirth educator. So I was teaching them childbirth, getting them ready for their childbirths.
So how many were there? Like, I mean, enough to teach, like pregnant teens. Yeah.
Yeah, I usually had a class full of at least 6 or 7 at any given time.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about it, I interviewed a guy who, I was just trying to think of the story. He was born in a place, it was in the Midwest. And that's where they sent the pregnant girls. I think he was from Long Island or some New York or something. they sent the pregnant girls to this place. I don't know if it was Kansas City or someplace like in the central. And he said there were 30,000 babies born there. And, you know, they would say they're going to visit Aunt Ida, have their babies and come home. Yes. And they were never the same, you know. So he was born there. He was adopted by another family, but he ended up doing a lot of research about it. He became a psychologist or psychiatrist, whichever one, I don't remember, but and really studied, you know, attachment and because he was he was put up for adoption. You know, I said, I asked him, I remember saying, you know, if you, you know, he said he didn't learn to attach because he was, I guess he was in the orphanage until he was adopted.
Right.
And he said he never learned to attach. And I said, can you ever learn that? And he said, no. Now, I don't know if that's true, but he said, no. Well, if you don't learn it.
There's a certain time during with an infant that if they don't receive it, then one of my daughters was in foster care for 5 weeks, as opposed to the one that came to us 2 days later. Right. And she has all kinds of attachment issues.
Even just in 5 weeks? Just in the 5 weeks? Mm-hmm.
Well, if you ever have a baby, you know, when you're holding your own baby and, you know, you're bonding for 5 weeks is a long time. And when that child didn't have any, you know, the kind of love she needed, when they called us about her, they said she's very tiny, very petite, you know, and so when I got her, yes, she was. And then I asked to speak to the foster mom because that's a long story too, but all of this stuff is also in my book. So,
okay.
So when I met the foster mom, I knew that she wasn't a loving person, you know?
Oh.
And so I thought, when we got her home in 2 weeks, she was the chubbiest, fattest little baby because she was getting love and attention and kindness, you know? I mean, she had been getting fed. It wasn't that they weren't feeding her. And that was one of the studies in orphanages was that the babies would get their food. They would get changed. You know, they would be taken care of, but they weren't really loved and held and nurtured. And that's what he's talking about. So they don't get that same attachment.
So even though she got it from you at 5 weeks, she never could really.
Yeah, there's like residual unconscious psychological stuff about I was abandoned. I was left.
Right. No. Right. That's what they say. It's a psychic wound that can, you know, that when you're adopted, you have this psychic wound.
Now, it's interesting, though, my other daughter doesn't have it. So,
really?
Yeah. And
because it was 2 days, do you think?
We got her 2 days out. Yeah, she was 2 days old when we got her.
And when did you find out she was available? Like earlier than that or right
that
then?
Day?
Wow.
In the morning. Yeah. And we had been waiting for 16 months. I'd been waiting for two and a half years.
Yeah.
For a baby, you know, in my arms. And so.
So how did you get a baby if they had told you you weren't eligible because you had three kids already? How was that different? Yeah.
The second time? Okay. So when Troy, my second one, was in the hospital and they had told us he was going to die, I went back to the adoption agency and I said, you know, look, there's got to be a way where we can. I'm determined. I don't give up on this.
Yes.
there's got to be a way we can adopt. And I said, look, we're open to any race child. You know, the only criteria is it's got to be a girl.
Right.
And I said, any age, any, you know, we prefer a baby, so she said, well, and this was in the 80s, mid 80s. And she said, we only place babies in the same race home.
Oh.
And I said, well, my husband's half black. And she said, oh, really?
Oh my God. That was your chicken.
Like said, it was like, all of a sudden we were a commodity, you know, it was like wow. The same people. A minute before, but I said, well, he doesn't look it. And she said, that's okay. That's okay. It was just a really strange experience. So we were then on the list for a child with black in their background, full, whatever. And so then when we got Shailene, and I had to change her name for the book, but anyway, we got her, and then her case went into what they call family reunification, where they give the birth mother a year to get her act together. And so we didn't know if we were going to get to keep her for a year.
Oh,
and we had, and I had to take her for visits. Now, this is somebody who I said, I don't want an open adoption. I want one that's definite. I've already lost two babies. I don't want to lose another one. And so it went into family reunification. I had to take her for visits. The good thing about that was that we ended up finding out I didn't tell you this part because this, again, it's all in the book, but when you're filling out your paperwork to adopt, they ask you all these questions. Will you take this in the background? Will you take this in the background? And they said, will you take mental illness in the background? And we said, sure. Now we're thinking background, grandma, great grandma.
Right.
So when we get the call, it's her birth mother is schizophrenic.
Oh.
And so it's like, okay, we got to make another decision, you know? And so I called a psychiatrist at that point, and just somebody referred me to. And I was telling him about it, and I was asking him, what are the chances? And he said, you know, all this, there's no conclusive studies. This was 1985, 84. And he said, all the studies they've done have been with children raised by their schizophrenic parents.
Oh.
And some of them get it and some of them don't. He said they haven't done any studies of children, adopted children being raised or, you know, with another parent. It's not. And so my husband and I talked about it. We looked at each other and we said, she's going to be fine. She's going to be fine. We're going to go. Because, the last thing he said to me, he said, well, I wouldn't do it. I went, okay. That's it. I'm doing it.
You mean the
psychiatrist?
Yeah, the psychiatrist. Wow.
He said, I would.
So then,
well, we'll show you.
So when you went to see the mother, like,
we didn't meet her until we already had the baby.
Right. When you went on the visit.
Yeah.
Was she like not like, why did she give up the baby? Because she was schizophrenic.
She didn't give the baby up. It was taken from her because she was schizophrenic. And the two brothers before my daughter was born, were also taken from her, and the grandparents were raising them.
Wow.
So, I mean, she seemed perfectly fine, but she was on medication, you know? I mean, there's a lot more stuff to this story in the book.
In the book, okay.
Yeah,
What was the year for the mother to change her mind? Like, what? Why was it in?
For her to get her act together to prove that she can take care of this child. And so when I go to pick her up, there's like two social workers. One's this old crotchety woman who's smoked too much and she's cranky. And then the other one's this young, new, vibrant social worker. You know, the old gal's going, well, you never know what's going to happen. And the young girl goes, you know, she hasn't been able to take care of her other two kids. She's going to be yours, you know. And the other one's, well, you don't want to make any promise. You know, it's like back and forth. And
I'm like, my God.
That old lady needs to go retire somewhere.
Yeah. Wow.
So
then, am I allowed to ask if she was okay, your daughter?
Yeah. She's a lawyer with a very large, highest known tech company.
Wow.
She's a lawyer, and she's married and has two beautiful children.
Oh. So she wasn't schizophrenic after all.
Nope.
Wow. And then the second one that you got after 5 weeks, was there any of that with her or no? The parents were long gone.
Well, we didn't know. No, the mother played. Okay, so the second one, we asked to stay on the list for one that was definite. Okay, well, mm-hmm. We were waiting for the first ones to.
Oh.
Because, you know, I didn't want to wait a year, lose her, and then have to wait another 16 months for another one, you know? So not knowing that we were now such a commodity, right?
Wow.
So we get a call. We had just gotten back from a trip with all the three boys and the new little baby girl, 10 days in the car, and walk in the door. The phone's ringing. I pick it up, and it's the social worker saying, "We have another baby girl for you." And it was a Friday, and I was like, "Okay." And she said, "And the birth." So they had started giving birth mothers the choice of the people they wanted to adopt. They were opening up a little bit. And so she had picked our profile that the social workers wrote, not us. That's important when you get into the adoption center and what we did there. So she had picked us out of about four or five couples, families, to be the ones to adopt her daughter.
But this was like 5 weeks later, after she had given birth, right?
Yeah.
Or am I confusing?
Yes.
So why did they wait so long?
Because they were trying to finalize the, what do I want to call it? Terminate the father's rights, the birth father's rights. So, because they can't play, the child can't be placed until both parents. And the birth mother had signed the papers for her rights, but the birth father hadn't yet. So, when a birth father doesn't sign or you can't find them, you have to the adoption agencies have to go through all kinds of stuff. Like they have to advertise and the paper where he was last known to live, and it all takes a long time.
And meanwhile, the poor baby's in not getting loved.
Right, right. And so then the other thing that happened was
that's terrible.
We got the call. Yeah. That's why at the adoption center, we did it very differently.
Yeah. So. Oh, good.
And, this is why all the experiences that I had.
Yeah.
We got the call on Friday, and I knew my husband was not going to be necessarily like, yeah, let's do this. So I said, "Can we have till Monday to let you know?" Because I knew I needed the weekend. And she said, "Sure, no problem." And that's when she told us the birth father's rights hadn't been terminated yet anyway. So then over the weekend, my other baby comes down with chickenpox. So then we had to wait for her to be over chickenpox before we could go get the baby anyway. So,
wow. So then you had five kids. You had five kids.
Yeah. And then I got divorced again. So then I was a single mom at 35, I think, with five kids.
Oh my God. And how? All right. We have to take our. Wow. That's unbelievable. Okay. We're going to hear about that. I'm just writing that down. 35 years with five kids. Okay, good. All right, we're going to go. We're going to go to our commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Okay, sounds good.
Parents and teachers, imagine a classroom where every child belongs, where kids are seen, known, and part of a real community. That's the world Kikori creates. Kikori isn't just another program. It's hands-on, playful, and filled with activities kids love, all while building skills that matter for life: confidence, kindness, resilience, and teamwork. Kids learn how to regulate themselves, connect with others, and discover the joy of learning that lasts a lifetime. And it works. Schools using Kikori have seen behavioral referrals drop by 25%, and teachers save hours of planning time. Whether you're a teacher building a safe, positive classroom, or a parent wanting your child to grow socially and emotionally, Kikori makes it easy to bring these life skills into everyday learning. So if you're ready to help kids grow stronger, kinder, and more confident while creating a community where every child belongs, visit KikoriApp.com. That's KIKORI, where kids thrive together.
Hey, it's Hillary from the Getting Real with Hillary Show. Life can be messy, raw, and real. And sometimes we're afraid to feel vulnerable. We're afraid to be that real self. Well, that's exactly what the Getting Real with Hillary Show and Getting Real Movement is all about, being our true selves. Every week, I bring you stories of transformation, authenticity, and hope.
people getting real with their struggles, their faith, and their breakthroughs. So don't miss a thing. Subscribe to my weekly newsletter today. You'll get stories, links to everything new, and how to create a life you love every week directly to your inbox. You can also find my books on Amazon. My courageous and riveting memoir, The Second Piece of French Toast, in case you feel stuck in your life and want to get inspired. How I came out about my no sex life and my marriage, in my second book, Real Talk. That one will get you speaking up in ways you've been too afraid to do so, and really creating amazing freedom. And my third book, How to Stop Fixing Yourself and Start Having Fun, the name is called Your Bullshit is Your Blessing. Find links to everything and subscribe to my YouTube channel, Getting Real with Hillary, and you'll find the links in the header. So visit, and you can also visit gettingrealwithhillary.com, because the real you is worth it and wants to come out. And thank you, as always, to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. If you would like to see a change in your children, have them more emotional and social, check out KikoriApp.com. It's an experiential social emotional learning platform that can make a huge difference.
Well, I love your books. That's great. And that's one of the things I talk about is how to find the blessings in things like this.
Yes.
And when you go through stuff like this. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, that's what they say, is that we grow the most from the hard stuff.
Absolutely.
And so while it's not so much fun to go through it, you know, we wouldn't have the lives we have if we didn't go through them.
That's right. I mean, as far as I always say that, as far as I'm concerned, Ryan and Troy, my two boys that died, they came, because I started looking at, why did this happen? You know, and I'm a strong believer in, we create our life before we're even born, and then afterwards we continue to create it. But I went, well, they decided to come here. Why did they, for that short time? Why did they do that? And I went, well, they did it for me.
Right.
So I needed to figure out, what was the message? What was the spiritual communication that they were trying? Why did it take two? You know, well, I didn't get it the first time, you know.
And what was the message? Can you tell us the message?
Yeah, I believe it was to go start moving into adoption, adopt the girls, give them a home, and then to start the adoption center. So for me, that's their legacy, or, you know, it's not there anymore, but that's what it, you know, there's over 300 babies that have homes because they came and went so quickly.
Wow.
That we didn't.
How did you know how to do that? Or you just did it? You just created it from nothing?
Well, one of the things that happened, and I know you know about this, but other people may not. I did the Landmark Forum.
Okay.
And when you're in the Landmark Forum, one of the things is that they get you to where there's your future is a blank slate, right? And you get to decide what to create in your future. And so at the end, they asked us, what's next for you? And I now know it was the divine telling me. And I stood up and I said, I'm going to start an adoption center in Santa Barbara. I was like, where'd that come from? You know? And I said, we're going to open within a year and we're going to do our first adoption within 6 months. Wow. And then we opened in 6 months. We did our first adoption in 6 weeks. And, and you know, that quote about commitment, that once you're committed, all manner of, I need to memorize that one. Everything lines up, right?
Yeah.
So I came out of it and I was like, how am I going to do this? You know? And I said, well, I want to find this one woman that I was in a adoption support group. I met her in there. And so I'm like, all I know is her first name. I didn't know her last name. I knew she lived in Santa Barbara and that was it. And so I'm driving through a parking lot and she walks in front of my car. And I roll down the window. I go, Joni, come here. And she's like, I've been looking for you. I said, I've been looking for you. And she said, I want to know if you want to start an adoption support group with me. And I said, I want to know if you want to start an adoption center with me. And she's like, okay. And so we got together and started doing it. And she knew about a center up in the Bay Area that was similar to what we were thinking about doing. Mm-hmm. So I contacted that guy, went up and talked to him and, you know, learned some stuff from him. He wanted to franchise us, which is illegal in a nonprofit. So our attorney said, no. So we just started our own. And I thought, well, he's going to be mad. But we had couples, but we didn't have any birth mothers. So we had some couples. And so I said to him, I'm going to send you my couples and you send me a birth mother for one of them. And so that's how we did it in 6 weeks.
Wow. Now, so is this when you were single with the 5 kids?
No, I started it before we got divorced, but.
Oh, okay.
But then we got divorced and I continued it.
Wow. And how old were your kids when you had all 5? What was the age span? I mean, obviously you had newborns.
Yeah. Well, we got divorced when the girls were 2.5 and 3. And so let's see, my youngest boy was 10 and the next one was 14 and the oldest was 17.
Wow.
I think that's right. I'm doing the math right.
Yeah. Wow. But that's a big span. Did the boys help with the girls?
Or yes.
Were they off on their own?
No, they were very helpful. I mean, the oldest one, Jason, had a job. And so but the other ones helped. The second one was going through some of his own issues. And then my youngest son, the middle one, when his dad and I split up, he decided he wanted to go live with his dad.
Oh.
So he was 9. So the group, yeah, he was 9 when he asked to do that. So, you know, I had 5 kids, right?
Right.
Single mom. So when he asked that, I didn't want to, but he was the type of child and human and adult, he still is, so I'd have all 4 of the others there and everything would be nice and calm and peaceful. He'd walk in and all hell would break loose, right? And it wasn't him fighting with them. It's them fighting with each other. It was just like everybody just started arguing. So when he asked to do that, I thought and thought and thought and decided to let him do it. And
did he stay with him? Did he ever
come back? He stayed with him until he was about 15, and then they started having some problems. Oh. And that was when I had gotten married to my 3rd husband, and we didn't have room for him to come back. So he went to live with his grandmother for a couple of years in the same town. So, yeah, that was not, I don't really have any regrets in my life. That's probably the only one I have just because of how he's a really different man than my other 2 boys.
Yeah. So your regret was that you didn't have room for him, that you couldn't take him in, you mean?
Yeah, that I let him go.
Wow.
So.
Oh.
But he's a good man now. He's a good man now.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about attachment. I decided when he was older, I said, I need to go back and mother him because he didn't get enough mothering from me. So then, and he and I are really close. He actually moved to Costa Rica with me for the first 6 months.
Hmm.
Now he's back in the States and starting a business where he's going to be taking, it's called Kicking the Bucket List. And he's taking people with disabilities or onto their bucket list adventures.
How cool.
Yeah. So.
So did you sell the adoption center when you were done or you just like.
No, it was a nonprofit. So you can't sell a nonprofit. You can turn it over to other people. I had hired a consultant to come in and help us because we were having some financial difficulties. And so when I was working with him, he said to me, you know, you're really a good coach. Will you come to work with me as a corporate trainer, as a consultant and corporate trainer? And so I decided to do that. And I had been priming this other woman to take over the adoption center. So she took it over. And then the board mismanaged it horribly, horribly. And so it closed. And matter of fact, when I saw what they did, I said, that place is going to close in 1.5 years. And it exactly did. And I quit the board when they started mishandling it, thinking they would stop and think. They let me quit. I was like, okay.
Mm.
So then it died, unfortunately. But we did do over 300 babies. So,
wow, that's amazing.
New homes.
Yeah. It's a shame it couldn't like keep going, right? But
yeah.
Anyway. All right. So we have, let's see, we have like 10 minutes left. Okay. I want to make sure we get to talk about, you know, how people find you and sign up for your stuff. And I know after that, you went across country and then you ended up in Costa Rica. Anything about those years that you want to share?
Well, when I decided to retire at 62, I was in a job where I was finding jobs for people with disabilities. Mm. And people go, oh, that must have been so rewarding. I go, well, not exactly, you know. And you have adults with disabilities, and then they're still with their parents. And sometimes the parents are just so unable to face reality, you know. So the parents were the difficulties, not necessarily the people. But I just wasn't happy in it, and I just decided one day to just popped into my head again, divine intervention, said, I'm going to buy an RV and go on the road. So I bought an RV.
So wait, the corporate trainer, that wasn't the corporate trainer. From the corporate trainer,
no,
you had this other position.
I was a corporate trainer for about 13 years. And then I was on the road a lot. And so my daughters were at home because they were really good girls, but then they weren't really good girls.
Oh.
And so I had to quit that and stay home.
Oh, okay. So then you have that job. All right. And how... I know this is probably none of my business, but I'm always curious. How did you retire? Did you have any pensions or any money socked away or anything?
I had a little bit in savings, not a lot, and Social Security. So,
and you were able to do that. Wow.
Yeah. And I worked on, while I was in the RV, I worked on the road a lot to different things. Like I was worked at the front desk of an RV park. I did camp hosting where you kind of check people in. And then I sold advertising for the park maps to local businesses and things like that. You know, just, and I did a little bit of coaching still.
So you would just say, hey, do you need any help? Can I do this for you or whatever? Like how did
there's a lot. Well, there's a lot of organizations that like there's workcamper.com has job listings that the RV parks put on there.
Wow.
So you can and go, oh, I want to go to such and such place. Let me see if they have something. And then you apply. And
how did you know that? Like, how could you ever know that? You know,
I guess I just did research. I guess I just got online and went, okay, you know. And probably while I was looking for my RV, I saw stuff. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow. And then once you find one, you find others. You know. Matter of fact, my son, the one that moved here and is starting that business, he has my RV right now, and he's doing camp hosting at different places. So,
what does that mean, camp hosting?
Well, like the one he was at just for the last 10 months, he was checking people in. They didn't have a office, but he'd check people in, make sure they're okay, help them get set up. He'd do maintenance, gardening, that sort of thing. Just different. Depends on what the place wanted. Yeah. So that helps your lifestyle going.
So you did that for 7 years. Okay. And then now what about your kids? Were they grown by then? So they didn't need you?
Nah. Yeah.
So you went, okay. And then after 7 years, you said,
Yeah, I was tired of hooking. I mean, I was by myself with my dog, you know, and I was like, and I was traveling around the country. I'd stay with my family members or I'd stay in RV parks, but our friends, I'd pull in their driveway, hook up to their stuff. And, you know, one friend I hadn't seen for 40 years and I went to her house and I stayed there for a week. And then after that, she would meet me someplace every year for a week and hang out with me. And, you know, I would have never seen her again if I hadn't done that. You know?
How'd you even know where she was? That's amazing.
Social media, right? Facebook.
Oh, right. Wow. Yeah. It's incredible. Okay. So after the 7 years, I'm watching the time because we do want to talk about.
Yeah, it was about 6 years. And then I said, I'm tired of hooking up and unhooking all by myself. And I want to put down roots somewhere. And so I joined an organization called International Living.
Okay.
And they start sending me stuff about places to retire on my Social Security, on my budget. And I saw Costa Rica and I just knew that was it. As soon as I saw it, I went, that's it. That's where I want to live. And then my son came to visit. And
are you allowed to, I had heard you have to leave, or I don't know if they still do that. You had to leave every 6 months or something.
Used to be every day, 90 days.
Yeah.
Because that's their rule here. There was a guy here who would put you on a bus, take you across the border into Nicaragua. You stamp your passport, you come back, and you've got another 90 days. And now it's 180 days, so it is 6 months now.
But you still have to do that?
No, I'm now a resident.
After how many years?
It only took a year and a half to get my residency.
Oh.
Yeah. Not citizenship, residency.
So. Oh, okay. I didn't know you could do that. I thought you had to invest like $250,000 or something in real estate.
They have different things. I'm what they call a pensionado, so I'm on my pension. As long as you can show that you get more than $1,000 a month, they'll let you stay.
Wow. Well, that's good to know. You hear that, everyone? You could be a pensionado.
Come on down.
All right, we have 4 minutes, so why don't we talk about, so Bev's book is called Angel Babies Forever, and they can find it where? Anywhere?
Well, right now they can go on my Substack. It's not published yet, but it is, the whole thing is on my Substack, unedited, so be generous. Yeah. be kind.
Yeah.
And that's, you can go Bev Berry on Substack or BY. Bev, B-E-V, Berry, B-E-R-R-Y. And that's my website. So once my website's up, you can find me at buybevberry.com.
Okay.
And that'll have links to my book and to my retreats and to my coaching and everything. And courses. I'll have courses on there too. So
awesome. And that's then, yeah. Go ahead. Do you still... I don't want to distract us, but I have to ask one question. Do you still do anything with adoption or no?
Not really. If somebody has a question, you know, that's adopting, but it's changed so much since I've been out of the business. You know, it's hard.
Right.
Okay. I just give them certain things, you know, like make sure you check out this. Here's questions to ask type of thing, you know, make sure you're where you want to be.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Now, what would be your vision or your for the world? Like 5 years from now, what would you like to see? How would you like things to
in the world or in my life? In the world?
You could do both.
The same.
Okay.
Well, I would like our world to get back to love.
What
was the answer? You know, it's like it's all about love. You know, the more love we can put out in the world, the less hate people will do. The more love we can give to those that are having a hard time loving, you know, just, and that's why my spiritual philosophy is love is the answer, you know. And I actually would like love again in my life.
All right. You hear that, gentlemen? So, okay. So love is the answer.
I'm a little weird, so. Perth here.
Yeah. So love is the answer. So you want it in your life, you want it in the world. And if that was in the world, how do you see the world looking?
Well, how do I see the world looking? I mean, I guess you could go out and see it. You know, you could see people being kind to each other. You could see people being happy. You could see people enjoy. You know, just loving their lives instead of, you know, you go out and you see cranky people everywhere, right? And it's like they just need love, you know, and they need love and joy in their life. And they don't know that they're responsible for that, you know. So it's up to those of us that do have it and can put it out to put it out. And I have to remind myself sometimes when there's a challenging person, you know, I have to say, love, love, love. Just love them no matter what. You know, that's that unconditional love.
I just heard a Werner quote because some guy was complaining about his wife and how nasty she was. And somehow the story goes that Werner said, consider that's their highest expression of love.
Mm-hmm.
And if you consider that, it's a lot easier to love them.
Right, right. And as they get more love, they can raise that bar for themselves.
Yeah.
But they need an example. See, that's, I need to be the example in the world of what it is, you know.
Right. And sometimes they're not aware.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Bev. We're out of time, but this has been
okay.
So much fun.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, your story is amazing. And thank you for all the wonderful things you've done. And thank you for Love is the Answer. I think that's awesome. Anything
thank
you want
you.
To say? Yeah.
No, I really appreciate this opportunity. And, you know, anybody watching? Oh, I was going to give them my personal email since the website isn't up yet.
Okay.
So it's Bev, B-E-V, Barry, B-E-R-R-Y, 13 at yahoo.com.
Okay. Bev, Barry, 13 at yahoo.com. All right. Thank you so much. Bye,
okay,
everyone.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.